Welcome to Couples Therapy in 7 Words. I am your co-host, Judy Alexander, and I'm here with my husband, Dr. Bruce Chalmer.
Well, hello, Judy, and hello, viewers and listeners. And Judy, tell folks the title of our episode today.
Dating at Midlife: How EFT Tapping Can Help Women Find Great Guys.
Our guest, our interview guest today was Allison Jane Ewing, mm-hmm. and she's written a book on that subject, and she was a lot of fun to talk to.
She was just delightful, very charming.
Yep, and a lot of good advice. And EFT, and I will mention this now, lest people think that from the title, we're not talking about the emotionally focused therapy, which is a really interesting form of therapy for couples, Sue Johnson's thing. We're talking about a thing called the emotional freedom technique, tapping, exactly. It's about a particular technique for tapping that mm-hmm. helps clear out traumatic issues and helps you function better in lots of different ways.
Mm-hmm.
So before we get going, I would like to put in a few words for our books. And I have a little more to say than perhaps I usually do.
Okay.
But go ahead and tell folks the book that started all of this.
The book that started it all is Reigniting the Spark: Why Stable Relationships Lose Intimacy and How to Get It Back.
And that's a book that came out just about 4 years ago now.
Yeah.
We're coming up on the fourth anniversary because it was Leap Day.
Yes, it was.
In 2020 that it came out.
So and does that mean it's actually the first anniversary?
You could say that. It's turning one,
but
you
know, because it's four.
And I want to say something about it that I don't usually say, and it just occurred to me last week to say this, and I didn't say it till the end, so I want to say it now.
Okay.
A lot of folks have told me, I want to give people a reason to buy it other than the fact that, well, that's an intriguing title.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of folks have told me that reading that book makes them feel better. I just think that's an interesting kind of thing.
That is interesting.
You know, because it gives people, and I experience this with couples a mm-hmm. lot, the way I talk about the particulars of what is it about being in a couple that things tend to go wrong or what makes it go right, people find it a different way of thinking about it that just gives them a sense of hope. It says, oh, that makes sense. And then they can relax about it and it helps them. So I just want to mention, you know, that's what I've heard from folks, and of course that's why I wrote the book.
Mm-hmm.
That one in particular, Reigniting the Spark.
Yeah.
Now, you can mention also the more recent book that I came out with.
Right. It's Not About Communication: Why Everything You Know About Couples Therapy Is Wrong.
And here's why you should buy that book, or not, frankly, either way, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, I mentioned Reigniting the Spark, it makes you feel better. It's not about communication, may or may not make you feel better, but it will give you a really good insight into this whole therapy business.
Mm-hmm.
Therapists in particular might find it fascinating, but even if you're a consumer of therapy, as we say, if you're a client, if you want to make use of therapy, what I talk about in that book is, you know, that subtitle, Why Everything You Know About Couples Therapy Is Wrong. It's sort of a silly subtitle, but it's about how the preconceived notions we often have about what therapy is or should be are often misleading.
Yeah.
And when you recognize that, you can make use of it in a much more effective way.
Yeah, especially because I think we see so many like weird, you know, like all those couples therapy things. Well, how do you feel when she says that?
Yeah,
and that's
yeah.
not how you work.
That is not how I work, oddly enough. It's funny. I once heard myself say that. I said, how does that make you feel? And I laughed because I never say that. It was in a very specific context. But again, if you're interested in at least how do I think about this stuff, mm-hmm. and again, folks have told me, well, wow, that's a take on this they hadn't heard before.
Yeah, because I watch those couples thing, and I said, I would puke if that was my therapist.
Yeah,
I would just walk out and say, you know, this is how I feel. You know, I can't do that on the air.
Yeah.
But imagine a middle finger going up.
Exactly. So just, you know, wanted to give folks a reason to look carefully at those books. You can find them anywhere books are sold. The Amazon site has them in all the various formats. Mm-hmm. I did the audiobooks for both of those. And it's also available for Kindle, and of course, also paperback. You can sort of see them over my shoulder if people who are watching the video.
I didn't get the copies
ready to hand here. And we definitely need to put in a word from our sponsor. Tell folks who our sponsor is.
Blue Tent, Erotic Tales from the Bible by Laria Zilber.
Yeah, Laria Zilber. And gee, Judy, why have we never managed to arrange an interview with Laria when you and Laria are both present?
Well, that's my pseudonym.
Yes, of course, because you are Laria, or that is your alter ego, yes. and a lovely alter ego she is, thank I have you. To say, a gifted writer. And, you know, why should people get that book?
Well, I think it's a fun read. It's an interesting read. It's an erotic read. So if you want to bring a little bit of zest to your love life, I would recommend that you read that either to yourself or each other.
Or with a partner, absolutely. Yes. And, you know, it's an exciting read.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an, what's the word? I'm thinking it opens you up in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
Because it's, if you're not used to erotica, this might be a nice way in. It's
it is
very
a nice
explicit.
Way in.
Very explicit erotica. And also.
But it's not trashy.
It's not at all trashy. And in fact, and I've always mentioned this when we talk about it, it is grounded in a deep respect and love for the biblical tradition.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you are versed in Torah, and these are all the tales from the Torah.
Yes.
And, or from the Bible in general.
Right.
And it is done with great love for those characters. And so some people, as I've pointed out before, some people will be absolutely horrified by this book, and you are not the audience that ought to buy it. But if you wouldn't be horrified by the idea of imagining these biblical heroes having these amazing sexual encounters mm-hmm. with great heart and depth and intensity, then you'll really like that book. So I would highly recommend you get that and tell folks where they can get that book.
They can go to lariazilber.com or amazon.com.
And I want to spell that for folks who are watching this, LariaZylber, lariazilber.com. Mm-hmm. And indeed, if you search for the Blue Tent, Erotic Tales,
from the
Bible. Make sure
right.
to include erotic
yeah, otherwise
tales.
Otherwise, you're going to end up with a blue tent.
You'll end up with a blue tent from REI or something like that, right? It is funny how that happens. So, without further ado, let us get on with our interview with Allison Jane Ewing, and we will see you on the other side.
Our guest today is Allison Jane Ewing. Allison is a psychotherapist and author. After experiencing a divorce herself, Allison decided to focus on helping other midlife women find healthy, available single men who will love and adore them. She works using a tool called EFT tapping to help women clear blocks to successful dating and open up to the excitement of falling in love again. Her recently published book is Find Love Again, Learn to Date Like a Goddess. Allison, welcome to Couples Therapy in 7 Words.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Our pleasure.
We're delighted to have you. So we always like to start out with our guests just asking, you know, how did you get into the work you do? Tell us something about your own journey.
Yeah, so I actually was a traditional psychotherapist from the fact that I did cognitive behavioral therapy. You know, most people will know that as just regular old talk therapy. And I did that for about 20 years. I was working in the inner city of Chicago with children and families through the Department of Children and Family Services. And at some point, I decided to go out on my own and do more staff training and things like that. And for those in the field or anyone in sort of a professional field where you need continuing education units, you will understand my pain on this, that I had gone from having my agencies always provide that training for me to being out on my own and kind of forgetting about it. So I kind of got in the weeds is what I say. I got to the point of I needed about 26 hours in like 4 months. So mm-hmm. I realized, okay, I have to play catch up and get my own certification and something. And by that point in my career, I was already pretty interested in mind-body connection and some of the mind-body techniques that were just starting to really get popularized and get some good research behind. So I was literally debating between, do I get trained in EFT tapping or do I get trained in EMDR, which some of your listeners might've heard of. It's another mind-body technique that's really good for clearing out trauma. But the EFT tapping training appealed to me slightly more because I liked the idea that it's also a self-help tool. And for anyone listening, EFT in this case stands for Emotional Freedom Technique.
Not to be confused with Sue Johnson's thing.
Exactly. Yes. If you Google it, you might find another kind of therapy with EFT, right? So,
different.
Yeah, exactly. So I was deciding between the two, and I like the idea of giving my clients something they could use on their own in between sessions. And I noticed that there was a training in for the Midwest, and it happened to be in Chicago, which I live outside of Chicago. So I thought, great, I'll sign up for this training. I'll get 12 hours in 2 days, and I will be, you know, really well caught up to what I need. And then a week before the training started, I got notification that it was not in the city of Chicago. It was actually in this little town called Glenview that I live in. And the training was a mile up the road from my house. And I was pretty shocked, to say the least, by that. And then when I showed up at the training, you know, typically you go around, you do introductions, right? And I was a little bit struggling to even be there that day because a very dear friend of mine had passed away the week before. And her name was Cindy. And she was from this town around here called Naperville. And she died of breast cancer. And a woman two rows in front of me said, "Hi, my name is Cindy. I live in Naperville and I work with breast cancer survivors."
Oh, my. Serendipity.
Right. I'm not sure I even really believed in signs at that point, but I thought, whoa, that's a pretty big sign that I am where I'm supposed to be. So I went to the first 2 days of training. I fell in love with the technique. I thought it was amazing. I saw results. I tapped with my 7-year-old son that night on his fear of the dark, and it went away the next day and never has come back 10 years later. So I really just realized, okay, I found my thing. This is what I want to do. I want to get fully trained in this. And I converted my practice entirely to just using emotional freedom technique and no longer doing the more traditional talk therapy.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yep.
So you only use the tapping?
I only use the tapping.
Oh,
yeah.
And of course, as you can explain, I happen to be trained in EFT and also EMDR, by the way.
Oh, okay.
Of recent years, I haven't been doing either one because I've been doing couples work. I focus entirely on couples work, but I found them very useful as well. You might want to expand on that idea. Of course, EFT does involve some amount of talking in the sense that you have to invite people to identify what it is that they're trying to, you know, what sort of trauma stuff they're trying to remove. Could you, tell us about EFT? Like, how do you use it?
Yeah. So EFT, emotional freedom technique, is basically a combination of some traditional therapy techniques like exposure therapy with stimulating one's own acupressure points. So I actually do see all my clients on Zoom, and that was pre-pandemic. I always did. And that was partially because I was a single mom and that worked for me. But people always ask me, do I tap on my clients? So the answer is no, I don't tap on my clients. They tap on themselves. And there are 9 acupressure points that we use in the emotional freedom technique that we have our clients tap on in the same order every time. The order isn't necessarily so important, but it does help for muscle memory to learn it faster if you just do it the same way every time. And when you tap on these particular acupressure points, it seems to send a calming signal to the amygdala, to the fight or flight center of your brain, and it shuts it off. And so if you are processing some kind of emotionally laden material, like a stressful situation, a trauma, a phobia, and you're tapping on your acupressure points at the same time, it basically collapses that neural pathway that was hooking the thing that was bothering you up to the fight or flight center of your brain, and it now hooks it to your frontal lobe. And for your listeners, the frontal lobe is where our logic, reason, and judgment lives. So you will still remember, for instance, a traumatic memory after you've done the EFT tapping on it, but it won't really feel like yours anymore, is what my clients say. It feels like someone else's memory. It basically takes away that physiological reaction that most of us have when we talk about something traumatic, because our body doesn't really know the difference between the present and the past. And when we relive a memory, I'm sure most people can relate to. You see someone talking about something stressful and their eyes bug out and they tense up and they lean forward, right? So there's all these biochemical things that happen when you're having a response to a stressful situation, but the tapping makes it so that you no longer have that autonomic nervous system response. And overall, your system becomes more regulated over time, the more you do it. And the more you're spending time then in your parasympathetic nervous system. I know you all know all this, so I'm just going to kind of explain. Okay.
So I'm finding this fascinating.
Oh, okay, great. So basically, most of us function all the time in our sympathetic nervous system, in our beta brainwave state, or a lot of us, honestly, in our high beta brainwave state, which is the stressful state. And our central nervous system is basically like an on-off switch. You're either in your sympathetic or you're in your parasympathetic. You can't be in both at the same time. So what the tapping does that's brilliant is it basically counter-conditions whatever is stressful and moves you from that sympathetic to that parasympathetic. And what's really important about that is that our body can only sort of rest and restore and repair when it's in the sympathetic nervous system. So, and that is associated with, what's that?
In the parasympathetic, right?
Yes, the parasympathetic. Thank you for the correction. And that's associated with alpha brainwave state. An alpha brainwave state is that state most people only are familiar with it before you're going to bed, like maybe kind of woozy, like starting to drift off. But if you meditate or you are a yogi and you do shavasana, that's alpha brainwave state, that mellow state you get in. What's fascinating about the emotional freedom technique is the research has shown people on EEGs, just doing a little bit of tapping moves them very quickly into alpha brainwave state.
Yes. You know, what I found when I was working with folks and I would do it myself, and I think I remember being told this in the training as well, when you've done it enough, you don't even have to tap. You could just think of the tapping. Because it is, and you use the word conditioning. And look, I don't think either one of us would qualify as a classical behaviorist. You know, that's not what we do. But any of the techniques, and folks have heard at least me say this in our podcast before, any of the techniques for treating trauma always involve that sort of conditioning process so that you pair the memory of the trauma with feeling safe enough that your brain learns, oh, I don't have to panic about this anymore. So it does know the difference then between a memory and an actual occurrence. It's the difference between a flashback and a memory. Rather than your body going into full panic mode, it's like, oh, that was unpleasant, past tense. So you remember it. But yeah, and then and EFT is great at that. You know, it's interesting. Again, folks will know this, Judy knows this. I used to be a statistician back in the day. Before I was trained in clinical psychology, I was a statistician. So, you know, there's this skeptical part of me when I hear about any sort of techniques, and I use them. So it's not like I don't use them. But I'm also a great fan of placebos.
Yes.
And placebo, and are you familiar with the work being done in, I never remember the guy's name, in Boston, who has an institute for this study of placebos, where they call them non-deceptive placebos. They tell people, we're going to give you pills that, as far as we know, have no organic effect.
Yeah.
And you take them with the intention of curing whatever you're dealing with, and the damn things work.
Is that Vanderkolk doing it?
No, it's not. No, it's not Bessel van der Kolk. No,
okay.
I never remember
anything. Another guy in Boston. Okay.
But it is a fascinating thing. And I'm also trained in hypnosis.
And
it's also been described as a non-deceptive placebo. You know, nobody's doing anything organic.
Right.
By putting yourself in that state. And I think tapping has got to fit into that as well.
Yes.
You know, and it's funny because when you believe in it, it works, but that doesn't make it invalid. That is part of the belief.
Right. Yes. And I definitely work with people who don't believe in it and it works for them too. So that's what's interesting. Yeah.
That was Bessel van der Kolk's experience with EMDR, right?
Yeah.
He thought, oh, this is nonsense. And then it worked, you know.
Right.
Well, I was going to ask, how do you use it with the women that you work with? Like, how does it work? Like, how, they come to you. You know, I'm divorcing my husband, whatever, and I want to feel better. How does that work?
Yeah. Well, so basically I was just doing a regular, you know, EFT practice, if you will, for many years and just seeing one-on-one clients. And then I went through a divorce myself in my 40s and I had to start dating again. And really, like, nobody expects to be dating again at midlife. That is not the dream come true, right?
People who know us through our podcast, we have one of our early episodes was our story. We are a second marriage. We've been together for 20 years now, but that is our story. And we both ended up dating. And well, Judy spared me an awful lot of dating. She showed up right when I needed her. It was astonishing, you know, talk about the universe, you know.
Right.
But she, yeah, you've been through that.
Yes, I've been through that.
Yeah. Yes. And I did realize when I started dating that I had knowledge and some tools that most of my single friends didn't, for instance. And I knew enough about psychology. I knew sort of how to talk to people, how to validate and use I statements and all the good things that we sort of learn early on as therapists. And I had this amazing tool of tapping so that if I was ghosted or if I, you know, experienced a catfishing, which I did, I mean, I've experienced all these things with online dating, I had a tool that would very quickly help me get over the emotional sort of initial like crushing feeling or reactivation of rejection and abandonment stuff or whatever of my stuff was coming up with dating, which a lot of it was. I had this great tool that I could use to neutralize it very quickly and to move on. And so it just kind of fell into my brain one day, like, I should write a book on this. And my heart really went out to midlife single women who get divorced and feel like, oh God, I have to do this awful thing of dating again. A lot of women feel that way. And then I have all these friends that were telling me that their friends and families were saying that to them. They were like, oh, I'm so sorry. You have to be naked in front of someone else again.
I know this is the last thing you want to hear on a podcast, but I have to tell our listeners, I read your book and it was really fun. Folks, it's a fun read. I really enjoyed it. Yeah.
I haven't quite finished it yet, but I'm almost there. Yeah, I'm really enjoying it.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you guys. That's wonderful to hear. Yeah. I mean, that was my intention, was to sort of like keep it light, but also have it filled with a lot of actual practical knowledge and skills that women could use. And I also realized that I enjoy a read where the author is very vulnerable and tells their own stories. Mm-hmm. And so that was my intention with the book. So I tell a lot of my own personal stories, my personal struggles, and I talk about how I shifted my mindset. I really kind of think about the book as the chapters are almost like every chapter is a mindset shift. And then I have a tapping script at the end. And I do, of course, go into how to tap and all that in the book. And so at the end of every chapter, I really encourage my reader to tap along with the tapping script so that they can really start to make that change. Because I feel like one of my frustrations in my early career was that my clients would get the insight. You know, they would figure out exactly why they were self-sabotaging, exactly how it may be tied to their past, but then they would keep doing that behavior and they wouldn't, you know, they had the insight and they still couldn't shift. And to me, I feel like EFT tapping has been such a gift because it helps me to shift. Yeah. It really is the thing that gets me to move off of that one emotional track, let's say, to the next. And it opens up lots of new thoughts and creative ideas and things like that. So I kind of joke that my book is a dating book, or that it's really a tapping book disguised as a dating book, because there is a lot of it's self-help, right? It's self-help. But I wanted more than the traditional self-help stuff that often gets put out there in this realm, in the dating coaching realm. And I think that that is largely because I experienced it. So for example, I went through the first few years of being single again and dating. I kept coming across, just love yourself more. And then you, and you find love. Right. Yeah. That's a chapter in the book. Right. And I think I say in the book, like, if one more person told me that, I was going to punch them in the face, because that is,
yeah.
Yeah. That's legit how I felt, because I thought I think I love myself, or maybe I don't yet, but I don't know. Does anybody totally fully love themselves? Like, is that even a thing? And isn't it an evolution? And it just gets frequently offered as the key to finding love. And I'm not sure about that. I think it's, of course, it's important. And of course, loving yourself is great. But the reason people don't love themselves is because they have subconscious blocks to loving themselves. They have old programming or wounds, childhood wounds or early adulthood wounds that are getting in the way. I mean, love is our natural state, right? But when we have all these other hurts and things that have happened to us along the way that make us kind of block up our heart or mask over, then of course it's hard for us to just naturally love ourselves and to feel into that love, I should say.
You know, what I noticed is in you, as I was reading that chapter, I just found it fascinating because I've told you this story. When I was an intern decades ago, I was working in a middle school. I was, you know, working with kids. I was doing testing, you know, psychologist. And I was noting that the courses they would have in self-esteem seemed to have the effect of making the kids that I was working, you know, who were sent to me as part of the mental health clinic, basically realize how, oh, great, I'm flunking out in self-esteem as well. You know, it was convincing them how bad they were. You know, they couldn't pass self-esteem. And what I noted when I was reading your chapter, I thought was fascinating because that concept that says, you don't always have to love yourself. In fact, you're not going to. And when you accept that, is self-love. Yes. That's self-love. When you actually accept that, you know, you're not always going to feel great. You're not always going to love yourself. You're not always going to be perfect. That is self-love. You don't force in self-love to do that. A course in self-love tends to push you in the other direction. Right. And I really enjoyed that.
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks. Yeah. I mean, I feel like that is so important because I think you're right. I think people can feel like I'm doing this wrong or I'm bad at it. I mean, I know I had nights where I was just crying and kind of like, you know, saying to my, you know, spiritual guides and stuff, like, help me do this thing that you're saying I should do. And then I realized that I just needed to accept that I was in struggle and that I was having this problem. It's like when you try to force yourself to feel grateful for things in your life by just writing three things you're grateful for every day. I mean, sometimes that works, but if you're resentful or angry or, you know, really suffering, then you can write things till you're blue in the face. It's like when you had to write lines in school to say you're sorry, and you might not feel it, right? But when you clear the anger and you clear the resentment and you clear the suffering, then you naturally feel grateful. And that's the whole key. And that's really the point of my book is when you start to clear the subconscious blocks to love, love will find you because you become magnetic.
He helps with clearing those blocks.
Exactly. Exactly. That's the whole thing. So as you tap away your blocks, then you become happier. And we all know happy people are magnetic, right? You walk into a Starbucks and if there's a person really smiley and happy, you're like, ooh, I like that person. And if there's a person in the Starbucks line that's like closed off and grumpy and, you know, really shut down, you're like, ooh, I'm staying away from that person. I mean, it's like our natural instinct as humans to kind of pick up on the subtle cues. And if you are the person walking around grumpy and closed off and bitter or whatever, because you're single and you're lonely and you're frustrated, that is a vibe that you're putting out there. But if you have cleared away your fears and your past heartbreak and all of these kinds of things that are getting in your way, you're just going to start living your life and you're just going to start doing the things that light you up. And that's probably where you're going to find your person anyway, without even trying.
Mm-hmm. Very true.
Yeah. You know, that one, another thing I really enjoyed about your book was, you know, the Yiddish word chutzpah? so chutzpah, you know, there's an element of chutzpah in your writing this, and which I really enjoyed because, you know, sometimes people will write a book like that and it'll end with, and I found Mr. Right. And so my technique is perfectly, it works for everybody. And what I enjoyed about you, and tell me if I'm characterizing this correctly, It's that, no, you haven't found the one Mr. Right yet. You have confidence you will if it turns out that that's what happens. The thing you're saying is you can love dating. What?
Yeah.
You know, that's an interesting thing. You can actually love the process, which is to say you can enjoy your life. And
Right.
of course, that is what
Right. And
facilitates.
I like how
Yeah.
you've said you've met a lot of interesting men that way and you're enjoying yourself. Whereas I think most people come back after one date and say, oh God. Oh my God, what is it about me that I'm attracting all these jerks, you know? But you're
Right.
enjoying yourself and meeting good and meeting stimulating people and having a good time. And while he may not be the one for you, you can still enjoy yourself with that.
There's actually been a change in that since I wrote the book that I can speak to in a second. But before I do, I think that I really want also to convey to your listeners, though, that it wasn't all sunshine and roses for me. I mean, I really suffered dating. I mean, I've been single for 8 years. I was in relationships, of course, during those 8 years, but I was dating on and off for 8 years. And I had a lot of ups and downs and frustrations and heartbreak and all the things. Because the thing is that life, at least my philosophy, is that life is made to sort of trigger your wounds that need healing, especially when you keep seeing the same pattern, you know, keep dating the same guy in a different body. It's one of the things I say to my clients, right? So the patterns come up because they want to be healed. And if you can stop and recognize, okay, this thing keeps coming up, I need to address it. And then to me, it's like if you have a great tool like EFT tapping to address something and address it pretty quickly, then you can really shift in that area and you will start to level up who you are attracting in. And that's basically what happened for me. You know, my early on relationships were a lot of emotionally unavailable, hot and cold, you know, the typical kind of thing you hear women complain about a lot. And then I started attracting in better and better guys. And I think I say in the book, it sort of restored, dating restored my faith in men because I was like, wow, there's actually some really great guys out here. It didn't work out for one reason or another, but I was like, these are actually like good guys. And a lot of them, my friends started laughing at one point because I was like, this is like the fifth guy in a row I've dated who was cheated on by his wife. Like, that's an interesting pattern I'm attracting in now. So I was meeting these guys who had been hurt themselves and not even realizing that that happened very often. And all of a sudden it seemed like, you know, and I don't think that
That's a
it
big part of my practice.
really.
Oh yeah, it happens a lot. Yeah, there are a lot of there's a lot of cheating out there. That's, you know,
Right,
part of how
right.
we operate as humans.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And I realized that, okay, so I've now fallen into this pattern of meeting this kind of guy. And I feel like to a certain extent, that was for me. That was given to me as a gift to say, like, no, there are trustworthy people out there. You know, there are, because I had experienced infidelity in my marriage, you know, my ex-husband. And so it was like, no, there are people out there who you can trust, who know what it's like to feel that hurt of betrayal and would never do it to someone. And so that was, you know, a really positive experience for me just in the dating. And the other thing, honestly, is I remember distinctly early on in dating having a night out with some single friends who were also recently divorced. And we could have all been sitting around and feeling sorry for ourselves and sad that we were divorced. And instead, we just went out and we had a lot of fun. Like, I don't even really remember. We were just kind of out and about in the city, going around to different, you know, places in the city and talking to people, meeting people. And no, we weren't hitting on anyone or getting hit on. It was just, we were literally just like meeting people and having fun. And at the end of the night, I said to them, hey guys, you know what is so cool about tonight? It's like we could have been sitting around with the other couples at the Saturday night barbecue thing that usually happens with couples in our town. And like, that's fun, but we kind of have the rest of our lives to do that again. And we had this opportunity. And this is something we would never have done as married people. And we had so much fun. And that's a gift, you know, that's really a gift to have these experiences, to do things. I mean, with my single girlfriends, I've tried all sorts of things, really pushed myself out of my comfort zone, which is something I talk about in the book as being important to your own healing process. But, you know, they'll say, do you want to go stand up paddleboarding? And I'm like, that sounds scary, but okay. So doing things that I previously wouldn't have done. And partly just because I think sometimes, you know, too, when you're in a relationship, you just have your habits and your little things that you do together and your routine, I guess is the word for it, right? And so when you're single, you don't really have a routine. And that can feel really scary. And it can feel like, oh, I have this endless amount of time alone. And you can look at it with that mindset, I have this endless amount of time alone. Or you can shift your mindset and say, wow, I have this opportunity to do something creative or something I've never done before, or step outside my box and just see what that's like. And some of those things I've done weren't that fun, but a lot of them were really fun.
Sound like an episode from Bad Moms?
Yeah, there has been that.
Say, as the one, the heterosexual male in this conversation, I want to invite the women to talk about this, and I just want to hear about it. The notion of being a goddess, I thought was fascinating, mm-hmm. you know, and how you, and that it, unless I'm conflating other things, you were relating something which I, as a man, said, you know, that never occurred to me because that's not my experience as a man. The idea of women feeling like you have to be chosen as opposed to someone who can do the choosing. And I thought that was fascinating. I think from a male perspective, we assume you're always doing the choosing. We're wrong. But that's what, you know, I think that's what we think. Anyway, I just want to invite the two of you to talk about that.
Well, I know that you brought up the whole notion of being Cinderella, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. That we're raised on. It's always the women having to perform and have to be a certain way in order to attract the guy. And we sometimes, I know I did, suppressed our real us, you know, especially if you have a guy telling you, you know, like, this is wrong, that's wrong. It would be so much better if you did it this way. And, you know, you start to doubt yourself.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. You start to get that internal critical voice. Mm-hmm. And I even feel like for me, and that's what I wrote about in that chapter, that it was so early. I mean, even before I had any relationships, I already was showing up feeling like, okay, I need to get chosen by the guy. I need to be like pretty enough and funny and clever and all the things, right? Okay. And I really did not stop to think, well, I have to be discerning. I also get to be discerning in this process and to decide if I want to be with this guy. And I think that what happened was because I was almost in that role of the stepsisters in Cinderella, like, pick me, right? You know, like that it honestly, it's, first of all, it's a very unattractive vibe. It's a very unsexy vibe. Like guys are like, okay, you know, it's a turnoff, right? It's a turnoff to us as women when guys do that to us. So that we know that's just human nature. That's not very attractive vibe. And also one of the other things I thought was sort of fascinating, the more I've delved into how Cinderella messed me up, was that if you think about it, the prince has this like massive amount of women swarming to be chosen by him. And he's literally above them on the stairs, looking down on them. But who does he go for is the woman off in the distance who is like not even looking at him, not paying attention. And I also think that at some point I got this program in my head that if I see someone out that I'm interested in or get a, you know, sort of juicy feeling about, I would sort of freeze up, you know, fight, flight, freeze. I go into freeze and then I would like look away and just be that, I'm going to be that distant person. And the thing is, it's like looking back on it, I'm like, that is so ridiculous because a guy is not going to approach you if you're being distant and looking away and not giving any vibe of interest whatsoever. So one of the things, I've created a companion course, an 8-week companion online course to go along with the book. And one of the things we delve into pretty deep there is this idea of smiling like a goddess at a guy that you're interested in. So really, when you feel that freeze, because I think most people do, that's our initial reaction, to go inside, notice your body, relax, and then look up, smile 2 to 3 seconds, and then you can look away and go about whatever it is you're doing, right? And but just enough to indicate to this man, I'm interested. And if he is available and interested, he will approach you after you do that, mm-hmm. right? I mean, you can speak to that as a man too, but that's been my experience. And so I think it really can help women to feel more empowered when they start to realize that, okay, first of all, I don't have to try to be chosen, because if you try to be chosen, you're going to attract someone who likes you for that false version of you, and that relationship will never last. But if you go on to dates and you say, you know what, yes, I'm going to put my best foot forward, but I'm also going to see if I even want to be with this person, like you would in a job interview, you know, you're going to see, okay, do I want to work here just as much as you want them to hire you, right? So that's really the mindset shift that I had to make for myself with dating. And it starts, honestly, from the beginning. I speak a lot about online dating because 70% of single people are online dating out there. And so, you know, I understand that this isn't going to be relevant to everyone, but I think it is to most single people. So starting even with creating your dating profile, ask yourself, am I really being my authentic self, or am I creating a dating profile as a sales page of what am I saying what I think a man would like to hear?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and when you're chatting with these guys or on phone calls with these guys before you go out, are you saying what you think they are going to like, or are you actually speaking your truth and actually just being in your own, comfortable in your own skin and being yourself and putting that out there and seeing how that goes?
Judy is the absolute master of this. When she put on J-Date, you know, Jewish, it was a Jewish name.
Yep.
What she put a phrase on there that was basically a test to get exactly the right person. She was doing the choosing here. Those listeners will know this, but I'll say what it was. It was an Eshet Chayil, but woman of today. Well, in the state of Vermont where we live, how many Jewish men were there that would even understand the expression Eshet Chayil? It's just an expression that means a woman of valor. It's a quote from Proverbs. The point being, if she just said that, I'd be thinking, oh, too orthodox. I'm not that orthodox. But she said an Eshet Chayil, but a woman of today, saying, oh, she's not that orthodox.
I wrote it to attract him.
She wrote
he
it.
Was the guy.
Yeah.
He was the guy.
We did not yet know each other, although we did know people in common, I think.
And I do have to say, after I met Bruce about a month later, I ran into a mutual friend who I didn't know knew Bruce. And he said to me, are you seeing anybody? And I said, yes. And he said, do I know him? I said, I doubt it. He said, who is it? I said, the only man in Vermont who's perfect for me. He said, I know who it is. And he was right.
Vermont's a small, you know,
so
a small community.
You have to choose what it is. I knew exactly what I wanted, and I wrote my profile to attract him.
And it was just amazing. It was like, that's intriguing.
Right.
It wasn't like, I'll pick her. Well, I did pick her, but she was also picking, you know, she was saying, this is who I am. And of course, it's absolutely accurate, which is the other thing you're saying, right? You don't want to put out something that might attract someone and it's false.
Right.
Because that relationship won't work. I mean, you know, I remember saying the same thing to my son when he was applying to graduate school, and he had an essay he had written that was bordering on the controversial for the field that he was in. And he said, Dad, I wonder if I should send this. And I read it and I said, Seth, this is so you that if they don't like this, then you shouldn't go there.
Right.
It's so accurate. So that's what you should send. And they liked it.
Right. And that what you just said there, that's the whole key, right? Is that you want to be so you that it's like, take me or leave me. And by the way, I'm deciding whether I'm taking or leaving you, right? But the reason most people can't do that, especially, I think, especially women in middle age, is that they are afraid.
Yeah.
So it's the fear that I will never find anything. I will never find anything better than this. I got to take what I can get. I mean, I can't tell you how many times I come across this theme with my clients that they feel, and they are told this, by the way, by their closest friends and family.
Uh-huh.
Well, that guy's good enough. Are you sure you want to break up with him? This just happened to my friend recently. Are you sure you want to break up with that guy? Because I mean, he's handsome and rich. And she was like, oh my God, I'm telling you, I'm breaking up with him because he can't meet my emotional needs and he has an addiction problem. Like, and you, as my mother, are telling me to continue to date him. Really? Like, what? Right? So, but this, I mean, it sounds funny, but it happens all the time.
Yeah.
All the time. Mm-hmm. Right? I always talk about the, do you remember the line from, this will date me, but when Harry met Sally, right? Where I think there's a line, I think Carrie Fisher says it, of like, you know, well, they say that you're more likely to be hijacked by a terrorist over 40 than find a single man or something like that.
I remember there was a Time magazine article that came out around that time. It was nonsense even at the time. It wasn't true.
Right.
It's even less true now. But yeah, there was that thing that was saying things like that. It was basically, you know, if you're a woman over 40, there's no way you're going to find another, you know.
Right, right. And that belief, I really feel like, is very, still very pervasive in our society. And it really scares women into settling for mediocre or sometimes even bad, toxic relationships. And they just really feel like, well, that's, I've got to take what I can get, which is a very un-goddess like. So that for me, the goddess thing was to symbolize empowerment. Mm-hmm. You know, I really wanted the book to move women from fear and negativity and dread about dating to feeling empowered, excited, you know, lit up about their future and the prospects and the things that away for them, and that big love is out there for them as long as they're willing to do the work to let go of the fear and the old programming and the old stories, and as long as they're willing to not listen to the voices of friends and family that are being negative and stay in their knowing. And I feel like that is extremely, extremely hard to do.
Yes, it is.
And EFT tapping will help you to do it. Tremendously help.
Now, you also talk about helping women to become goddesses in the bedroom.
I do.
How can EFT help with that?
Yeah, well, I felt like, oh, I can't write this book without having a sex chapter. So, because I think that that is also something that women, especially I think in sort of my generation or a little bit, you know, older than me, like we have been somewhat repressed, and there's was a lot of shame maybe still in the 60s and 70s around sex and sexuality. And so it's like we have so much baggage around sex and sexuality, and just like clearing the baggage around self-love and clearing the baggage around past hurt, you can clear your baggage around sex and sexuality, and you can actually start to enjoy it. I know so many women in my, you know, in their 40s, 50s, 60s who see sex as a chore.
Ooh.
And as something that you do for your partner and not necessarily something that you enjoy. Or there's women also who I think became single and were like, ooh, like I get to have sex with people, right? And you know, there's some women that dread it and are fearful of it. And then there's other women who are excited about it, but then kind of can get shamed. You know, there's a whole thing out there of like, well, what's your body count? And oh, I was in a summit last summer with a guy who was talking about how it's not okay for women to have high body counts. And I thought my head was going to explode on Zoom. Yeah. Yeah. He's a dating coach. Yeah. It really was so frustrating. Wow. Yeah. So the point is you can use EFT tapping to clear shame and guilt. And what I really go into in the chapter, which I think is vitally important to a good, healthy sex life, is to become mindful when you're intimate with your partner. And by mindful, I mean being present and aware in your body, having, experiencing the moment, participating in the moment, moment to moment, right? That's kind of the basic definition of mindfulness. But I think it's so important with sex, because what happens is women can sometimes get in there and start thinking, well, does he like this? Does he like me? I need to keep the lights off because, you know, he won't like my body. I'm overweight, or my skin is too wrinkly, or he could be, I hear this one all the time, he could be with a much younger woman. Why would he want to be with someone with this body? You know, so there's all these things we get in our head. And really, the guy is just like there with you and excited and wanting to worship your body and wanting to give you pleasure. You know, I say very clearly in my book, my experience post-dating has been that most men just want to make a woman happy and want to give you pleasure.
Or it's a guy that you don't want.
Right.
If the guy doesn't want that, he's the wrong guy.
I say that. I say, if he doesn't, run. Run far and run fast, because they're very few and far between, guys like that, you know? And if you keep attracting them, then you have some subconscious pattern that is being gratified by that. So that's going to be your work, right? So if you feel like, no, those guys are everywhere. No, they're not. So that's something that you are attracting in or being attracted to. And so I really feel like what's so important is, if you can be mindful during sex, if you can really feel like the feel of your partner's hand caressing your skin, and you're not thinking about what am I cooking for dinner, right? Your pleasure during sex and sexuality is just going to exponentially explode. And I have taught women this technique who were never orgasming and, you know, are orgasming all the time now. So this is something that really will help you, if you can learn to just stay present and stay in your body, to experience so much more pleasure and stop worrying about him and stop worrying about, you know, I've had clients ask me, well, how do I give a great blowjob, or how do I this, how do I that? It's like, just be in the moment and go with what feels good and communicate. Don't expect him to read your mind.
Which is all about not freaking out.
Right. Like,
willing to say what you like, what you don't like, and ask questions if you need to ask questions. All of those things. Yeah. Which so many people, all the folks I work with, they hear this all the time. They're frozen. They can't talk. They have a hard time with that.
Yes, a really hard time. And EFT tapping works great for that, by the way, because frozen is fear and anxiety. And so I have had clients where that's actually the most thing we work on is, you know, freeing up that frozen response. And sometimes it's because of, you know, maybe past sexual trauma, which that's someone that I would work with in individual therapy, because it's a deeper issue, obviously. And you have to be very careful and cautious how you approach that for safety. And at the same time, I've had other women who have simply said, how do you have that conversation about safe sex or what? And I'm like, what do you mean? What? Huh? Like, I don't get it. So you just say to them, like, we're going to use a condom unless and until we decide we're going to be monogamous, and then we can go get tested, you know? And by the way, like, some of these things are also really good indicators of whether or not you want to be with a person. I was dating a guy once and I said, okay, well, if we're agreeing to be monogamous, let's go get tested so we can forego condoms. And he said, no, I don't need to get tested. I know I'm clean. And, you know, the woman I was with, I only dated one person the last 2 years. And I was like, so I don't care. He said, yeah, but I got tested with her. And I'm like, yeah, okay, it's been 2 years and you don't know if she was faithful. Yeah, I do. She was faithful. I mean, and we just went round and round and round. And then actually the pandemic hit and we ended up breaking up. But I was thinking, like, this is really a little nutty. Like, this is a big red flag that you're just not willing to do this thing that would make me feel safe being intimate with you. So it's a good indicator.
Well, before we wrap up, I want to ask you, just to, if you are okay saying, you did indicate that there had been a change in that status in your own life since you wrote the book. And I'm very curious about that.
Yes, I am too. Yes.
So actually, when I was writing the book, I actually was in a relationship with someone who I did love. And it was a lovely, sweet relationship. And he was an adoring boyfriend. And there were issues there that I knew all along it wasn't going to be a long-term relationship. And so as I was writing the book, I still have this very vivid memory of, I'm writing the book and at the end of the chapter, I'm saying, like, I want you to have the most epic, juicy, amazing, you know, love of your life relationship and not settle for anything less. And I was like, oh, I'm kind of settling right now. And so, you know, and then honestly, some serendipitous things happened and we ended up breaking up a few weeks after that. Yet looking back, I got so much out of that relationship, and he actually helped set my kids on certain trajectories with some things he got them involved in. And so it was all lovely. It was all beautiful. And then I put the book out and I started kind of dating again. And I But I did at one point about this time last year, I kind of got real negative about dating again. And I got in my head, and I know part of it was I was like, okay, now I have this book out there and I'm supposed to be this authority. And like, this is not, working. Like, I'm not meeting anybody good. And so I got negative. I talk about this a lot in the book. And when you get negative and you go online, guess what you see? Negative, negative, negative. So that was, negative feeds negative. That's our reticular activating system, the part of our brain that sees patterns. And when you decide you want to buy a Jeep, you suddenly see Jeeps everywhere, right? If you decide there's no good guys online, you're going to see no good guys online. That's how the brain works. So anyway, I was struggling. And then in the spring, I was like, okay, I need to do a reset. I need to go off online dating and work on myself. So always my biggest advice to your listeners is always turn in. When it's not working, turn back in, go back to yourself, go back to working on yourself. I do work with a tapping practitioner myself. We did some, deeper healing work. I did my more regular practices of meditation and tapping. And I met a guy and it seemed like, okay, he's got a lot of, things that I was looking for. And so we're sort of plodding along, but then he was kind of flaky and unavailable. And I didn't pull the plug as fast as I should have. I kind of let it go on. So I didn't do what I say to do in my book, by the way. I am
I'm
guilty.
shocked. I thought those of us who preach these things always practice exactly.
We're perfect. So then finally, I just had an awakening. And I remember it was Memorial Day last year. And I was just like, oh my God, what am I doing? Like, this guy is emotionally unavailable and I just need to end it. And so I ended it. And in the meantime, I'm from Massachusetts, by the way. So, and as you all know, up in New England, the towns are very small. And my high school was 400 people, very small public high school. And I had a guy on Facebook had friend requested me from my high school, but I didn't know him from high school, but I knew the name and his best friend dated my best friend's sister, whatever. Anyway, and he had kind of liked a few of my pictures here and there. But Memorial Day, I break up with flaky guy. And June 1st, this guy reaches out to me and we start chatting on Facebook. And we just kind of hit it off and we know all these people in common and we have all this sort of shared history and we started talking. 3 months later, when we actually found, he lived in LA. That was the big problem. I live in Chicago. But it was very obvious to both of us, I would say, after maybe like 6 weeks that like, oh, there might be something here. And then we met and that was great. And it's just been going great ever since. But it was basically 3 to 4 months in when I thought, oh my gosh, my technique did work for me. I did the work, and then I didn't have to go out seeking. I didn't have to worry about my profile or worry about, or push or struggle to get dates. Like, my guy came to me when the timing was right. And so I just want to say that to women out there that if you're really, down and out about it, first of all, look up EFT tapping, try it. Any of your listeners can also download my book for free from my website, inspiredlifetapping.com. Read the book, do the tapping, start to shift, and just let go of the struggle. Don't be constantly updating your pictures on your profile and all of that. Just be your most authentic self that you can be on your profile, but in life. And if you're really chasing or struggling with a guy, just let that go because he's not your guy. And I promise you, your guy's out there and he will come to you and he will find you once you just let go of all the other things. And maybe even that guy is your guy and he'll come back around, but you got to let it go. Chasing and struggle and all of that is just going to create more misery for you. And it is going to keep you further from, it's going to make you take more time basically to find your right person when you're getting mixed up in all that kind of struggle.
So inspiredlifetapping.com is your website, and we'll put those. Thank you so much for doing this.
Thanks for having me. This was great.
Thank you.
Welcome back. We hope you enjoyed that interview with Allison Jane Ewing.
And indeed, we had a good a lot of
We
fun
had a
with
good
that.
time. She was great.
Yep. And I just want to remind you briefly, go buy our books.
Go buy your books.
We've got It's Reigniting the Spark. We've got It's Not About Communication. We've got Lowry's book, The Blue Tent, Erotic Tales from the Bible. Also, if
and,
you...
And Allison's book, too. That was a fun read.
Allison's book was a fun read. You can get that for free, apparently, from her website.
Yeah, yeah.
InspiredLifeTapping.com. And also, if you have suggestions for guests or topics, go to our website, ctn7.com, and let us know. And so until next time...
Remember, be kind.
Don't panic.
And have faith.